Hi, this is Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's. From the moment you walk in, we want your meal to feel easy, welcoming, and unrushed. A great night out isn't just about what's on the plate. It's how you're greeted, how you're taken care of, and how everything flows. We pay attention to the details so you don't have to. Good food, good service, good timing, start to finish. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan. Oh, and book your table early on frackletons.com.
Izzy,
Alexa,
Sunshine,
Dorothy,
good girl, MAGA,
B2, come on everybody, let's herd up.
Okay, ladies, there's a lot of people counting on you, so let's get out there and have some calves.
We're back with round two of Shorty's Countdown to Calving. There are 9 chances for you to pick the date you think each cow will have her calf. If you pick the right date, you could win a $50 prize. Play round two of Shorty's Countdown to Calving on the contest page on SheridanMedia.com.
This announcement is brought to you by Farmers Co-op, your farm and ranch supply store on Coffeen Avenue.
Sometimes healing begins with something as simple as showing up. A child who's afraid to speak. A veteran carrying more than we can see. A woman searching for strength again. At CHAPS Equine Assisted Services, volunteers help become steady hands and compassionate hearts beside a horse's quiet power. And in that space, something changes. Shoulders lift, smiles return, confidence grows. You don't need horse experience, you just need heart. This spring, be someone's turning point. Email Lou at volunteercoordinator@chapsyo.org. Step forward and help hope find its way home.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Monday, March 2nd, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting. And this is Public Pulse. This morning we're joined by Hubbin Smith, Director of Dementia Friendly Wyoming, Heather Comstock. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you.
Now, how long have you been studying dementia?
I've been working specifically in the field since fall of 2016. And since the fall of 2018, I've been doing graduate studies alongside the work. So it's 2026. So
a decade.
A long time.
Yeah.
It really is a long time.
I look back over the years and sometimes, you know, it seems like the older you get, the shorter those years really seem. Time seems to change when you start to get a little bit older and it starts to fly by. If you could sit back and really look at one thing that you wish people understood about dementia. And I know this is kind of a big question to start off with, but what would that be?
If I was really brave.
Yeah.
About this question. Okay. Symptoms are going to show up years before your diagnosis.
Okay.
And that's really confusing for families. By the time someone gets a full-on diagnosis, they may be into it about 5, 7, 10 years.
Wow.
So there are a lot of things that have happened during that time that will make sense in hindsight.
When I'm aging and I start to do these little things, forget the keys, where did I put those? I mean, how do I kind of differentiate between, well, it's just being human, because we all misplace the keys of the wallet, or is this a symptom?
That's a really good question. I think it's important that people know that there's a difference between memory-led forms of dementia, like Alzheimer's, and then there's other forms of cognitive decline that are more, that have much different symptoms, like frontotemporal dementia, Lewy body, vascular. So your question, how do you know if forgetting your keys once in a while is a big deal? One thing that can be very helpful is when we think about, is a person able to pay attention and are they able to sustain that toward concentration? And that really helps us know if they're having the ability to follow through or finish an action. Now, if you Floyd, I'm going to guess you think about a lot of things all the time. So there may be a chance you've divided your attention. And so when you put your keys down and you find them in the fridge, it might be because you were thinking about something else.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to really put it out there. Don't go self-diagnosing yourself just because you're maybe thinking about a couple things. I think we're looking at a pattern over time. We're really looking at when you're not following through with things, bills, appointments, get-togethers with your family. You know, if you're not able to sustain attention, which means you can't concentrate, so you're going to have trouble fulfilling tasks, that's when a family could get really interested in, is this memory-led? Or you might have significant navigation. You might be going down the road to caffeine and suddenly realize, man, I don't have a map in my head for how to get to Petco. And that is an honest conversation I have with people. I can get there. I just sometimes that map is gone all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So when is it something else? This is when it gets really confusing. If it isn't memory led, and that's the majority of what what the websites are talking about, you might be experiencing someone with really heavy emotional fluctuations, and we would call that being moody. So maybe they have energy fluctuations, or maybe they're having some auditory or visual hallucinations. You know, there are some pretty extreme other symptoms that may not fit that memory-led criteria.
When we sit down and we start looking at family history, are all natural brain change occurrences linked hereditary, or is that only for certain ones?
That's a really good question. So I'm going to give you a really marginalized answer so I can stay out of the penalty box. That is really hard to answer. I think that there are certain types of dementia that have a more statistical significance in terms of family lineage. But I also think, again, and I've said it over and over when I've been on the air with you, is that it's the lottery that we're all in and no one wants to win. We don't really understand exactly why this shows up for people.
Okay. That's early signs or something that really signals that maybe I should explore it. As you said, we're looking for mood swings and attention.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a couple different things. We're looking for people that are having trouble really concentrating, following through, who maybe have a different idea of a previous conversation or situation, who maybe don't remember the last conversation or have a different, a framing of it. And I would say it's going to show up differently for everyone. There is no one path. What I would say is, if people are wondering, is this normal or is this something else? Is it over a sustained period of time, say 4 weeks, a couple months? Is it different from the person's normal? And what's interesting is if you're living in town and you're around your loved one, you might start noticing some blips. But if your loved one is out of town and they call in, every 1 or 2 or 3 months, you're going to take longer to notice those blips, because oftentimes people are going to keep their social skills much longer. And so that can go highly unnoticed by just the average phone call.
Wow. Yeah. So really, you want to check in with the people who know your parents the best?
I would say when people are spending a lot of time with people, they're going to notice things, right? So it could be, example, if someone was, coming down at the hub and they have a whole routine. Like they have a routine and they start deviating from that routine, we might get curious. Are we deviating because you've decided to have a new routine, or is there something different? Has something caused that pattern to be interrupted?
Mm. I've got a friend, someone who's very, very close to me, suffered a brain injury a number of years ago, and this was quite a while ago. Periodically, over the course of our phone conversations, she'll tell the same story twice. Maybe at the beginning of the conversation, she'll say something, and then towards the end, she'll say the same thing. We've always kind of said, well, that's because of that. When you start seeing these patterns, having these tough conversations with individuals, that's got to be one of the hardest things any family member goes through. Sit somebody down and say, we think this might be going on. Can we go to the hospital?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. So uncertainty is So this workshop series I've got going, it starts this March. It's going to have a section on uncertainty. In April, one on anxiety. And in May, one on, you know, fear and aggression. So uncertainty, it shows up. The research shows that when families are trying to work out what's going on, it's hardest before they have an idea, whether they get a diagnosis or they just start to understand this is a collection of symptoms and this is the new normal. So that is a heavy time period. And it's a paradox. Even if you get a diagnosis when you're trying to work out what's going on, yeah, you're happy you have a diagnosis, but it doesn't necessarily make it better. Now you got to take the next step, which is now that we know something's happening, what do we do? How do we live with this? I'm trying to remember your whole question here. So what do we do? What do you do when you're having this hard conversation? A lot of compassion for yourself and the person, recognizing that that person may or may not in the moment be on the same page as you.
Yeah.
So I'm looking, and I've said this before, so forgive me for repeating myself. I pay a lot of attention to conversations as in stoplights. Are we both at green? Is one of us at yellow? Is one of us at red? If one of us is yellow or red, there's a high chance that conversation is not going to go the way we all want. So to have these, we need to talk about something's maybe happening. It would do well for us to make sure we're both at green. We're as calm as we can be. We have a situation where we're not going to get interrupted, and it can take as long as it needs to take. One thing we notice is that we stress putting our plans together, financial or whatever that person wants as real end-of-life care early, because we want that person to have the ability to have their voice. We notice if a person is going through this as they progress, sometimes the plans they create in the moment, especially if that conversation starts to feel vulnerable or a little taxing, that plan might change a little bit for that person experiencing the changes. They might decide on a different plan in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the reason we might need to back down and reapproach later. Finding the right person to have that conversation, that person that is well-respected and trusted. A lot of people mention that their person sometimes remembers and sometimes doesn't. Yep, that gets to be there.
Yeah.
And then different family members are going to have a different idea of what's going on. And so you might have an entire family with every single person having a different perspective about what's going on, which is why a conversation with someone like me can be pretty helpful. First of all, we can lay it out. What is the scenario? And how can we learn to not have as much judgment and introduce possibly the most important key ingredient in all of this, which is going to be curiosity. Curiosity is going to enable us to start seeing patterns. It's going to help us work together as a family or a support unit, especially if our person who's going through the changes is experiencing delusions or hallucinations or confabulation. And by that, the confabulation might be, I'm going to tell you a different story every time you talk to me because it's different for me every time I tell the story. It's important for a family to realize that no one's trying to be the disruptor. We need to externalize the stress here. The stress is this person's ability to have perspective is changing, and we all need to come together to help shore up those deficiencies.
We're going to talk a little bit about fear in the second half, but that is something that I think I would instantly feel if my daughter were to sit me down and say, Dad, over the course of so long, I've been asking you these questions, trying to identify patterns, and I'm starting to see something. That fear would instantly fill me up, because I feel like, and of course I don't have to mention, no one in my family suffered it, but I try to empathize with these individuals, because you just feel like your whole life was stolen out from underneath you by something that it seemingly no one has any control over. So when we come back, we're going to talk about some fear and even aggression. More with Bun Smith, Dementia Friendly Wyoming, right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Hi,
I'm Maren Borsheim.
And Nicole Pierce with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Right now, qualified homebuyers may receive a mortgage rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
Yes, through the Mortgage Rate Relief Program.
It's designed to make buying your primary residence easier and more affordable.
We'll personally help you check eligibility and guide you through the process.
Call First Federal Bank and Trust for all the details or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust, because your home should be within reach. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Tax changes can be overwhelming and confusing, especially regarding the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. With over 70 years of tax experience, H&R Block knows how to navigate change. We'll take time to understand your situation, explain the new tax law, and how they impact your taxes. And with an H&R Block right in your community, it's easy to get the convenience and the care you deserve. Call the Sheridan office, 307-672-9787.
Are winter illnesses keeping you or your family from work, school, or play? When fever, cough, or body aches strike, don't wait it out. At Same Day Health and Imaging, we're here for you 7 days a week offering quick, compassionate care. Illnesses don't follow a schedule, but our extended and weekend hours have you covered. Same Day Health and Imaging, located at 1470 Sugarland Drive between Walmart and WyoVision. Walk-ins welcome or schedule an appointment. Visit SheridanSameDay.org to learn more.
This public service announcement brought to you by Atlas Chiropractic. Your healing begins when you pick up the phone.
The IRS and the AARP Tax Aid Foundation have partnered with the Hub on Smith to offer free tax preparation and assistance. To make an appointment, please call 672-2240. You will then get a return call to finalize the appointment, so be sure to answer. You will be asked to pick up a packet prior to your appointment, and we have a team of IRS-certified volunteers happy to assist you.
If you haven't signed up for the Sheridan Media Newsletter, well, now's the time. You'll find some of the top news stories of the week, community events, local sports, weather, as well as the latest movies from Centennial Theater, what's happening at the Wild Theater, discover fun facts, local photos and videos, Sheridan history, country bounty links, as well as links to some of your favorite businesses and promotions. It's emailed every Thursday morning. If you don't get the newsletter, you're missing out. Click on the Sheridan Media Newsletter button that's on the front of our website at SheridanMedia.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're speaking with the director of Dementia Friendly Wyoming at the Hub on Smith, Heather Comstock. Now, we talked about some things in the first half that I guess you could say might spur some people into some sort of action. Down at the Hub on Smith, Heather, you have these workshops that can really help some individuals who are kind of starting to realize that they're entering this world, either themselves, family members, someone that they're taking care of. Let's talk about these workshops. What's the next one coming up?
The next one coming up is going to be in just a couple weeks, second Wednesday in March. And it's I can't remember the date off the top of my head, but it's going to be at 10 to 11:30 on the second Wednesday in March. And this one's about uncertainty. It's an important place to start because no matter where you are in the trajectory, it's uncertain until we have a conversation about it. And in a group setting, that can be very helpful to really frame what is uncertainty, how should I deal with it, what are some ways that aren't very helpful to deal with it. And just as a quick example, it's very important that a person recognizes what they can have agency over, what they can do something about, versus things that are just bigger than they can change. So these workshops help people kind of get off the shelf of just real fear.
Yeah,
and you get a chance to talk to other people that are dealing with this. They've been dealing with this. Some people, it's the first time they've ever showed up at a workshop. For other people, they've been coming to workshops for 10 years. So getting really honest about why having that inner conversation and making it external. This is the new norm. This is what's happening now, and I don't know what to do. That's uncertainty. It's important to step into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the way I would want to be approached. Just direct, you know, this is what we believe is happening. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I can't control that. Let's get to work.
Right.
How do I live this new life? What steps do I need to take to ensure that things are still getting done as I, for lack of a better term, try to live with this?
It's a really good point. And I think I want to really be specific about this. I don't need a diagnosis to help someone that is noticing symptoms that deviate from their norm. So you have a diagnosis. Okay. We might have a better idea of the exact ways we want to approach it. You don't have a diagnosis. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to make an assessment about some areas that need some help. And one reason this is so important is because many times when something's not going well, how do we live with this? Let's say you run a business. Let's say your parents always run the business and they've done a really good job, but you aren't quite sure of how much is changing until you're getting notices that things aren't being done. Mm-hmm. And when you run a business, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So we're talking about what's happening in the moment and forecasting some general things about you could expect in the future. It's important for family members and other people that are supporting people going through various cognitive changes to not expect too much, but not take away, independence and autonomy too soon. And I often say, and I'm saying this to myself and to my friends, hey, you know what? We're all getting older. We need to start planning for this. I'm looking at automatic bill paying now. I'm looking at how can I set things up so that if I, you know, am unable to live independently, somebody else can take over for me and look over my affairs. And I think in the question, or I guess the bit you were saying earlier about, you know, talking about how you might be thinking about this too, even in terms of like, if I was a family member and I needed to have this conversation with my loved one, I would recognize that, yes, this is scary. This conversation is scary. It makes us anxious, but not having it is the no plan.
Yeah.
And I said it before, but I'll say it again. It is a bad plan. So let's just say your person isn't ready to have the conversation, or maybe they just don't understand what you're seeing. Okay. Well, then we work with that too. We carefully take things in a way that, you know, we're renegotiating who handles really delicate matters. We're making sure that things are getting done and we're moving tasks around and we're doing it in such a way that we're not making it worse, right? We're not being too directive or too punitive, but we're, you know, one example is a friend of mine said, you know, at the point my husband wasn't supposed to drive anymore, I said, you know what? I really would like to practice driving. I think it's my turn to drive. And that worked for that family. She didn't say you can't drive. She said, you know, I'd like to practice driving.
Let me help. Let me step in and help out with this.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that this conversation, I mean, we're not always going to have the conversation that we want to have. Like, it may not happen the way we want it to happen. At the end of the day, we need to make sure that we're still talking. So we might have to have, you know, really intense conversations in sections.
Yeah.
We might have to let the situation show us how to move forward in that conversation. I mean, coming to talk to me as a conversational coach is, you want to have this hard conversation, let's game this out. Let's look at the variables. Let's talk about some ways that maybe you don't want to do it.
And I think that's probably the best way to do it. Yes, I would like the direct approach. But even then, thinking about somebody sitting in front of me and telling me these things could come as a pretty hard emotional shock.
And that makes me think of one thing. What I would be very interested about you, Floyd, is what is your value system? I want to know, are you concerned about being a burden to your daughter? Because if you are, that's going to be how we have that conversation. We know, Floyd, that you don't want to be a burden. And we've been noticing some things, and we'd like to talk with you about how we could handle this to make sure that we are doing it in a way that aligns with your values.
Excellent approach. Excellent approach.
It's in the research.
Yeah. What is important to me, and how do we address that first to ease into the conversation and address what's most important to me? What's the other workshop?
Then in April, we're going to do one on anxiety. So anxiety is really interesting because if you've never had anxiety, you may not really know what that is. But if you have had it, you say, ooh, I have an idea of what that is. Anxiety for some people is pretty immobilizing. It makes it hard for them to take the next step. And sometimes it even causes them to ruminate such that they can only have the worst case scenario as the outcome. So talking about this with a group, you know, we really walk it out as a concept. We talk about some strategies. We talk about how it shows up in real life. And, you know, and the benefit of having a workshop where the community comes is you, again, as a family member, get to see this isn't just you. There's a whole lot of people in your community that are going through this. And by the time people leave that workshop, it's my hope, my aspiration, that they can feel more confident about asking uncertain questions, right? Because, like, why do we get anxious? We don't know about something or how to do something. Well, you know, well, let's talk about it. What is it? And I'll have some ideas in the workshop, a place to start, but I'm really hoping people show up with their own questions. And if we can talk about it during the workshop, great. And if not, I'll say, hey, let's have a conversation after, let's make an appointment, because we want you to get to the next point. Here's the real, I would say, the thing we need to be careful about anxiety. If we don't pay attention to uncertainty and anxiety, we can accidentally end up in a place we or our person we're caring for, supporting, is going to get fearful. Yeah. And fear unaddressed is a need unmet. And a need unmet can turn into forms of aggression, whether it's microaggression, maybe it's a communication, passive aggressive, I don't want to talk about this, I don't want to approach because I don't know how to talk about it. Or maybe this person is like, you know, they really just, let's just see, think of a scenario with a man and his daughter. The daughter has always known her father is the person who puts things together at family gatherings. And now the father just sits on his chair and doesn't do much. And she's tried to reach out to him. And the harder she tries, the more he pulls back. And then she, you know, one day takes him to an appointment and she's in a little bit of a hurry and he snaps at her. And he's never even yelled at her whole life. And she's thinking, what's going on? Well, she doesn't know from his point of view that he feels like something's off too.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know what to do with that either, you know? So it's this idea of, you know, when we're not able to talk about it, when we're not able to see the initial signs, we are going to have to get more accelerated signs. And so I always think fear and aggression is not something that should be framed as necessarily a bad thing, but a pretty great indicator that we could do well to really look at the patterns and reapproach communication from a different point of view.
And that's the third workshop that we're talking about.
Fear and aggression.
Fear and aggression.
It's the thing most families are concerned about. It's the thing most people going through change are worried about.
Yeah.
They're worried about, and I've talked to multiple gentlemen and women that are really afraid they'll hurt their family mentally. They don't want to be mean, but you know, sometimes they can't emotionally regulate. And sometimes they say things and they wonder later why they did that, you know?
Yeah. So uncharacteristic of themselves.
Yes.
That, again, so scary to me to have to think about that that would be going on. How can folks learn more about these workshops? Contact you if they're out there thinking, you know what, I would love to sit her down and ask her some questions.
Makes sense. So you can call me. I have a direct line. It's 307-461-5955. You can come to the hub and request an appointment. And if I'm there, I'll come out and talk to you. You could email me at hcomstock@thehubsheridan.org. And riffing one more time on your example there, I would say, you know, even if you and I and your daughter had a conversation, you know, it would be like, these are some fears. These are some real fears. You know, I'm worried about if X and Y happens. And in that conversation, we would be basically saying, hey, if these, what are our fears? And we're talking about that. And then you now have this ability to feel a little less stressed because now your fear has been voiced. And now she has an idea. If she does start seeing some things, you guys have maybe agreed on a plan. The whole idea of conversating and agreeing on a plan, that is a wonderful feeling for someone who, like you, maybe having some anxiety, some anticipatory anxiety. If I had a child and I was 75 years old, I would be having this conversation. If you start seeing things, what are we going to do about it? Yeah. How are we going to handle it?
And it also kind of puts the ball back in my court where I feel like I've lost all control. At least I can take the things that I know I can control, get on those so that we can be ready for the things I can't. Heather, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me this morning. It is always a pleasure having you on, and we are so lucky to have you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, when we come back, we are going to speak with Dr. Eric Richards, Director of Bands and Jazz Studies at Sheridan College. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
This is Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
And I'm Nicole Pierce. Buying a home just got more affordable.
With the Mortgage Rate Relief Program, you may receive an interest rate up to 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That could mean lower monthly payments on your primary residence.
If your household income qualifies, we'll walk you through everything.
Call us for all the details at First Federal Bank and Trust or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust, helping you get home. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Long day? Let Burger Wagon cook for you. Jamie and the crew are serving up hot, fresh burgers at 1590 Sugarland Drive, right next to Pack and Mail. And now there are three easy ways to order. Swing by and see them in person, order through DoorDash if you're on the go, or call 751-3957 and place your order the good old-fashioned way. Three simple ways, same great burgers. Burger Wagon, good food made by good folks right here at home.
Mandy Kolziska from Century 21 BHJ Realty brings you this Pet of the Week from the Dog and Cat Shelter. Two-year-old Pisces is the life of whatever party you throw. This German Shepherd mix loves everyone she meets except cats. Gizmo is an 11-year-old kitty with a lot of life left in him. Although blind, he's looking for a warm, cozy home and someone to love him. His handsome face and huge saucer eyes will win your heart.
When it comes to Wyoming, your roof takes the hits. Hail, wind, snow, and sun. That's why Brandon 307 Roofing and Exteriors installs metal roofing built to last. From commercial-grade R-panel, residential metal roofs, and our impact-resistant 24-gauge standing seam systems, every option is engineered for strength, longevity, and performance. When you want protection that lasts a lifetime, call Brandon 307 for your free inspection. Quality materials, quality installation, local experience you can count on. Visit Brandon307.com. Brandon 307, Branding Wyoming, one home at a time.
A great meal that benefits a great cause. The Knights of Columbus Lenten Fish Fry Dinner, 4:30 to 7 p.m. this Friday, March 6th at 301 East Brundage in Sheridan. Tickets are $15 a person or $75 for a family of five or more. Kids five and under are free. Dine in or take out. Proceeds benefit the Holy Name Catholic School Tuition Assistance Fund. For shut-in delivery, call 672-0936. The Knights of Columbus Fish Fry Dinner, this Friday at Rodellini Hall, where the Knights of Columbus meet.
What do you like about the Home Builders Home and Garden Show?
I'm looking for some remodeling ideas.
I can ask building questions.
I get to see folks I haven't seen for a while.
From bed and bath to porch and patio, you'll find it all at the Home and Garden Show, March 13th through the 15th at the Ramada Plaza. Brought to you by the Bighorn Home Builders Association of Sheridan, whose members are committed to promoting the highest standards in the building industry.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting, and for our second part this morning, we are talking with the Director of Bands and Jazz Studies at Sheridan College, Dr. Eric Richards. Good morning, sir. Welcome back.
Good morning, Floyd. Happy March.
Happy March. Yeah, as you were telling me on the way down here, we're hitting a crest of concerts this year. How's the semester been so far?
Oh, it's been very good. You know, this is the time of waiting and rehearsing and preparing, and it all, at least for the bands and jazz area, it all starts to come online next week. So now is when it really starts to get fun.
You know, with the lack of snow going on, yep. Have some of the students asked, hey, can we do class outside today? Have they asked that yet?
I have not had that question yet. Although there have been a couple of days, not so much with rehearsals, but with some of my academic classes, I've been tempted to take them outside. But we are so tethered to tech, you know, to be able to use them, to be able to cite examples, and our spaces are all really nicely teched out. So I kind of hate to give that up to go just for some good old, you know, fresh and sunshine.
Walk from this building to building. That's going to get you your fresh
air.
Yeah,
right on.
Now, as we were saying, March is a really busy month for you. You got a lot of performances coming up at the college. What can audiences expect from Sheridan College Symphony's band? First program of 2026 is going to be March 8th.
Well, this is, we are This is going to be a wide-ranging concert. We will have both our trombone choir, which is a group made up of trombones and tubas, which, you know, that's my favorite instrument. So representing the voice of God in many musical compositions. So we typically come out and play three short pieces. We're going to play a very well-known piece by Moiré called the Rondeau, and I'm not going to say much about it, but by the time we get 5 seconds into it, people will recognize it. And then we are playing Gounod's famous Funeral March of a Marionette, which, for my boomer audience members, if anybody is a big fan of crime and mystery shows of the 1950s and 60s, they will recognize this. And then we have a nice minuet by Handel for trombones. Then we actually bring out the full symphony band, and this is a wide range of music, going all the way from a classic march by John Philip Sousa, the High School Cadets, to some really exciting music for wind band. We're playing a couple of pieces that are rather epic. So this is an exciting, powerful program, and it's all free and offered with love to the Sheridan community this Sunday at 4:00.
It sounds like there's going to be a lot of really good classic music in there that, as you said, a lot of people might not even realize that it's ingrained in their minds until they get a couple notes in. One that I wanted to ask about, John Philip Sousa's The High School Cadets. It remains such a staple here in America. Why do you think that is?
Well, he was America's best-known march composer, and at the time of his activity, you know, in the late 19th and early 20th century, he was pretty much a rock star. I mean, his conducting and the Sousa Band, which toured nationally. This is, you know, we didn't have stadium rock shows. People would come out to go to hear the Sousa Band play an evening of marches and classical music. So he was a major figure in American music, and his work continues on because it's truly classic and well-written, and people always respond to marches, I think. I don't know whether that's part of the American cultural psyche or what, but it seems to be ingrained in what Americans love about wind band music, and so it's important to us to always pay tribute to that.
Growing up, I always wondered, you know, every high school and college has got their own marching band. And of course, they've got a march that they use to head down the road. There is something absolutely American about that.
I think we're in agreement on that.
It's
yes.
just very unusual to me as to how that got so ingrained in us. Now, moving on down the line, how does, and I'm probably going to slaughter this name, DeHane, Larry DeHane?
Oh, Larry Don.
Don,
yes.
Don.
Yep.
As Summer Was Just Beginning, it captures the spirit and legacy of James Dean.
Right. This is just a beautiful work, lovely, touching work. And he was, Larry Don was inspired by the life story of James Dean, as you know, which is certainly rather melancholy and tragic, but also really captures this, I guess you could say, the zeitgeist of 1950s America.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Right?
The
right,
rebel.
Right. Picture him in the leather jacket. But, and then, you know, it kind of flamed out, life flamed out quickly. And so what is really interesting about this piece is how composers respond to various kinds of stimuli. And so the way that Larry Don in his work dealt with this is he found a beautiful folk song from the British Isles and harmonized it in a very touching way. And I believe the original title was As Summer Was Just Beginning, which is an allegory for James Dean's life. I mean, his career was just really taking off and then it met its tragic end. So this is one of my favorite gorgeous, one might call it a ballad for band, and the band is, our symphony band is sounding wonderful on it. What's interesting, I find, as a conductor, there are certain pieces that just naturally resonate with our musicians, and I have really had to say very little about this. I mean, they just immediately dug down deep, pulled out the musicality and deep emotional content, and I look forward to rehearsing this every night because of the way that they play it. And I think this is because of that connection between the musicians and the score, I think the audience is really going to appreciate that and hear that. So we're looking forward to performing that.
Now, I don't want to get too far off in the weeds, but while you were talking about that, I had a couple questions pop up in my head. Number one, in all the time that you've been conducting and watching and growing these students, is there a type of march, music, something that you know just will instantly resonate with them? Something that you've seen, whether that be some type of music or a particular line of music that you know is going to cause the goosebumps every time.
Well, I would say that, you know, to kind of continuing on with the discussion about Larry Don's piece, if there is a sincere element of emotional content, I mean, if it's really, if the students and our fantastic community musicians as well, I mean, if the musicians of the group really detect that this is really sincere, deeply felt, honest, with a capital H, music by the composer, that seems to really connect with them as well. I would say, and you will get to hear some of this on Sunday's concert, if there is an element of vitality that's typically represented by exciting rhythms, that tends to really resonate, maybe a little more towards a younger demographic. But if there is that vibrancy of life as represented by rhythms in the music, that tends to really hit things very well. And I guess I think of it as a conductor, I think of it as a sweet spot. You have to find pieces that have all of that stuff on board, you know, the musical substance, the honesty of the musical narrative, and yet it has to be doable. I mean, there are pieces that have all that stuff, but are perhaps outside the comfort zone of where we are now. So there are a lot of sweet spot parameters that have to be considered. And if you can find music that addresses all three of those sweet spots, you're in business. And that's one of the things I love about this program that we're playing. I think just about everything on there, in one way or another, addresses those sweet spots.
All right. After that, we've got the Jazz Ensemble, Spring 26 edition.
Already here, yes. So Sunday afternoon, remember to set your clocks back at 4 o'clock as a symphony band. And then Wednesday evening, March 11th at 7 p.m., which is our usual time of a jazz concert, we have Jazz at SC, the Spring 26 edition. And the highlight of this is that we are featuring Dr. Scott Jeppesen, who is the chair of the music department, world-class saxophonist, composer, arranger, grew up and was trained in Los Angeles and now is the chair of the program at MSU Billings. So he's going to come down and be featured on several tunes with us. He's performed several times with my Bighorn Jazz Orchestra, and audiences may be familiar with his playing from those performances. It's just off the charts. So we're looking forward to collaborating with him. And he's going to be, that is Wednesday, Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock prior to the show, he's going to be offering a free jazz improvisation clinic, primarily oriented towards high school students, but it's certainly open to anybody in the community. And both of those events, the clinic at 4 o'clock and the concert at 7 o'clock, are free and open to the public, and they'll take place on our own Kinnison Hall stage in the Whitney Center for the Arts.
That's fantastic that these individuals who come to visit you give the community time.
Yep.
And say, you know what, I'm gonna bring some of my expertise
right
for
on
you, and I'm gonna share it and improve everybody.
Yep.
I think that's fantastic.
Me too.
All right. The trombone choir opening set, helping to frame the tone for the rest of the afternoon program.
Well, that's back to the symphony band.
Oh, that's the way back there.
That's on Sunday. Yeah, but that's all right. We can talk about, I'll talk about trombones whenever you want to talk about it.
What I want to do is move to Samba for Sensei, because this is your piece, correct?
Well, that's right. So after we've done our two concerts, we have a concert on Sunday, a concert on Wednesday. I have the privilege on Thursday, the 12th, of delivering our Thickman faculty, one of our Thickman faculty lectures at the college, which was made possible by the endowment by the late, great Dr. Seidman. And various members of the faculty speak on areas of research and expertise. And I'm going to speak, my topic on Thursday is musical journeys across borders. And I've had a lifelong love with Brazilian music. I have no idea how this happened because I come from a family of steel workers in Pittsburgh. I'm going to talk about this at the lecture, but I've just fallen in love with it. And to some degree, I've become kind of a resource for people that if you want a high energy Latin, Brazilian, Cuban, whatever flavored piece, Eric Richards might be a guy to call. So one of the pieces I'm going to talk about on that lecture is called Samba for Sensei. Now, Sensei refers to one of my strongest patrons, Dr. Gene Aitken, who's a internationally known jazz educator. He built the program at the University of Northern Colorado at Greeley, produced many, many, many musicians, educators, recordings. And for several years, they would ask, after he retired from Greeley, they would ask him to come back for their annual college jazz festival and put together a band of musicians, educators, clinicians. And he would, out of his own resources, he would commission music for this concert. And every year, I guess I got kind of typecast. He would ask me to write the concert finale, and he would ask for it to have some sort of Latin feel. And so I've had a lifelong love of Brazilian music, and I always kind of jokingly but respectfully called him Sensei, you know, master teacher. And so we came up with Samba for Sensei, and that's one of the pieces I'm going to talk about at the lecture.
That's fantastic. Now, when it comes to someone who's never attended a jazz a concert at Sheridan College, why is it, would you say this is a fantastic one to actually make their debut?
Well, for two reasons. One, the groups at the college are always sounding very good, and they're sounding very good again this year. Two, actually three reasons. The second reason is that the opportunity to hear Scott Jeppesen for free is really going to open up some eyes, and I think may energize some people to start exploring jazz. And three, one of the things that you get at a jazz concert that you don't get in other kinds of music is the I word, improvisation. And that is where students and community musicians, and especially Scott, will be creating music on the fly. So basically the band plays these supporting structures, chords, and rhythms, and there's music that is going to be made that night that will never be made again, and was only made that night, and that the element of improvisation is what makes it so exciting. It's kind of like walking on a musical tight wire, you know, or high wire, I should say. When you get folks doing this stuff in real time, you try to get folks who are experienced and successful at it. So the odds of success are higher, but even among the greatest, things can go wrong. So it can be very exciting. And I'm predicting an excellent evening of some real-time creativity and a chance to hear a master artist. And I forgot to mention that our one of our instructors of voice at the college, Amanda Allen, is also going to be singing. She has an important recital coming up that she's going to talk about at the concert, but she's going to be singing a couple of tunes with our combo, the SC Jazz Tet. So there is everything. You have two different kinds of soloists, a vocal soloist, an instrumental soloist, a combo, a big band. It would be a great way for anyone who wants to dip their toe into the pool of jazz to do it for the first time.
Now, for individuals after they've seen this, maybe that fire has been ignited within them, you know, you've opened up doors for me. Where would I go after that? If you were to recommend to someone.
Well, I would say to try and start looking for some listening lists. If someone, there are a lot of already curated listening lists on services like Spotify. Way back in the day, an LP-driven set or an LP set of resources was called the Smithsonian Collection of Classic Jazz. And it was a set of LPs, you know, a box set of LPs that kind of did the research for you and took you all the way from early 20th century music through ragtime, through swing, to modern elements were when that thing was released, which I think maybe got as far as the 1960s. So there, I would say either online or at your library, look for already curated playlists that can take you through, you know, give you kind of an overview of what's going on in the jazz language of the 20th and 21st centuries.
Doc, do I need tickets or can I just
free,
show up?
Free, open to the public, no advance tickets.
Okay, fantastic. Doc, I want to thank you so much for coming in this
morning.
My
pleasure.
We're going to play us out. Samba for Sensei. This is by Dr. Eric Richards, the Director of Bands and Jazz Studies at Sheridan College. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Sheridan, I'm Nicole Pierce.
And I'm Maren Borsheim with First Federal Bank and Trust.
Dreaming about owning your first home?
The Mortgage Rate Relief Program could lower your interest rate by 1.5% below the current market rate with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage.
That means real monthly savings.
It's available to qualifying homebuyers purchasing a primary residence.
Let's see if you qualify.
Funds are limited, so stop in, call us, or visit efirstfederal.bank.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Homeownership just got more affordable. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you looking for an awesome career with great pay and benefits? Do you have skills in carpentry, plumbing, and electrical? Do you like operating heavy equipment? Sheridan County has the immediate opening for a full-time airport operations technician, and they'd like to talk with you. Find out more today on the Sheridan County website, then send your resume and cover letter to humanresources@sheridancountywy.gov or mail it to 224 South Main, Suite B1 today.
Wow! Get ready to swing! The Spicy Pickles featuring Hannah Rodriguez are bringing their vintage jazz vibes and big band energy to the YO stage Thursday, March 12th at 7 p.m. Known for their playful arrangements, tight grooves, and danceable rhythms, the Pickles are a revival of the golden age of jazz with a fresh, contemporary edge. The Spicy Pickles featuring Hannah Rodriguez, Thursday, March 12th, 7 p.m. Get your tickets now at the YO box office or online at yotheater.com.
Tax changes can be overwhelming and confusing, especially regarding the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. With over 70 years of tax experience, H&R Block knows how to navigate change. We'll take time to understand your situation, explain the new tax law, and how they impact your taxes. And with an H&R Block right in your community, it's easy to get the convenience and the care you deserve. Call the Sheridan office 307-672-9787.